Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. We have a lot to share today. We're going to talk about how the active ingredients in hot peppers and cannabis calm the gut's immune system. University of Connecticut research. Also, how chronic fatigue syndrome is linked to an imbalance in the microbiome. That's from Columbia University's Public Health School. We also will talk about how orange essential oil may help alleviate post-traumatic stress disorder, George Washington University, and how Italian nutrients can make a difference that are used in their cooking. We should be using them too. It's part of that Mediterranean living a longer lifespan. And curcumin could combat colitis, Baylor University. And also how diet products can make you fat, who says? University of Georgia. And also more evidence that diet sodas are not good for you, Boston University. Also today, I will take a look from our environmental segment from Columbia University study on the extinction risk for many species, vastly underestimated, a lot worse. And we're losing 200 species every 24 hours. Wow. And can turmeric really shrink tumors, reduce pain, and kill bacteria? Well, we're going to give you the latest research on this. And also today, I'll be looking up the latest information on subtropical dry lands. There's a lot of people. We're talking about hundreds of millions. Actually, billions of people live in subtropical dry lands. Not good, because when we hit 2 degrees Celsius, quote, from Climate News Network, subtropical dry lands heat up far quicker than humid climates, so the global temperature must be kept below 2 degrees centigrade to avoid serious consequences. How serious? I'll let you know. So we have a lot to share. Also, I gave you part one yesterday of the legacy of activism involving health. And today I'll give you part two, and I'll be very specific today, issues that I've specifically spent my entire adult life working on. And I say this because some people assume that when you turn on a radio and you hear a health program, it should all be about carrots and broccoli and celery and some vitamin C maybe, without any awareness, completely cognitively detached from the reality that you wouldn't have any health options today, none, zero, if there weren't thousands of people working for the last 50 years on fighting these battles. And I'll give you an example. One of those battles just today is coming forward where they want to take away your right if you get a physician to give you a prescription for a particular type of natural hormone replacement therapy, you won't be able to get it. In fact, most of the things that you take for granted, you won't be able to get because they don't want you to have these natural medicines anymore. That's today that the FDA is going to move against numerous natural compounded medicines. And yet ask the average American, do you take coenzyme Q10? Yes. You won't be able to. How about vandenyl sulfate for diabetes? Yes, forget that. Artemisium, forget that. And also one of the most important anti-aging nutrients to come along in a long time, NAD. They want to get rid of that as well in its regular form and disodium-reduced version. And those play important roles. Who are they? These are the pharmaceutical companies behind the FDA. They control the FDA. The FDA is a complete criminal organization, in my opinion, and should be completely dismantled. They should put a lock on the door, fire everyone working there, and prosecute everyone who was involved in any of the opinions that led to unnecessary death and injury when they knew that drugs should not have been approved, and they did because they were getting money from the drug companies. And by the way, there's no statute of limitations on prosecuting those people. And start over, getting independent scientists, physicians, nutritionists, behavioralists, who will review the safety and efficacy of all drugs, all foods, and then make determinations without profit or politics being a part of those decisions. So we're starting again a whole new campaign to protect your rights to take these nutrients. But it's been going on a long time. Most people are just not aware of it. And also last night on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I had a professor, John, no, excuse me, I had a, yes, Professor John Gartner. He's a professor of psychiatry, Johns Hopkins University Medical School. And he was concerned about Donald Trump's mental capacity. Interesting, I chose not to stop during the discussion because I was concerned if I challenged him on the DMS and orthodox psychiatry's accuracy and diagnosis, that would be the whole discussion. And I wouldn't get a chance to hear what he believes Donald Trump is suffering from, subjective as that may be. But there are 50,000 healthcare professionals who agree with him who signed a petition. They think Donald Trump is psychiatrically imbalanced. I'll have a commentary on that also today. So you see, we pack the hour. I don't know if I'll get to any of my audio clips today. I've got 5 good ones. If time permits, I'll get to one. Let's begin. If you look at what makes a hot pepper really beneficial for you, well, it can thin the blood. It can help kill parasites, bacteria, and viruses. It can help bring pain relief to joints and muscles. But something new has been added to this from the University of Connecticut. So you wouldn't think chili peppers and marijuana have much in common, but when eaten, both interact with the same receptor in your stomachs, according to this new research and published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, our foremost scientific journal in America. The research could lead to new therapies for diabetes and colitis and opens up intriguing questions about the relationship between the immune system and the gut and the brain. Now, if you touch a chili pepper to your mouth and you feel heat, yes, and biochemically, you're not wrong. The capsaicin chemical in the pepper binds to a receptor that triggers a nerve that fires off to your brain. Hot. Those same receptors are found throughout the gastrointestinal tract that we still are not aware of why, but the same identical receptors. Now, curious, University of Connecticut researchers fed capsaicin to mice and found the mice fed with the spice has less inflammation in their guts. The researchers actually cured the mice of type 1 diabetes. Let me repeat that, especially to someone from Oklahoma who doesn't believe in any of this. Researchers actually cured mice of type 1 diabetes by feeding them chili pepper. So when they looked carefully at what was happening at the molecular level, the researchers saw that the capsaicin was binding to a receptor called TRPV1, which is found in specialized cells throughout the gastrointestinal tract. And when that pepper binds to it, the TRPV1 causes cells to make a particular chemical. And that chemical is a compound chemically akin to cannabinoids in marijuana. And it was the chemical that caused the immune system to calm down and the inflammation to go away. So, just to let you know, the hot peppers work in the gut much like cannabinoids do. And I definitely recommend cannabinoids for seizures, lung cancer, brain cancer, and also autoimmune conditions. Chronic fatigue syndrome, a lot of people have it, is linked to an imbalance in the microbiome. This is from Columbia University. Scientists at the Center for Infection and Immunity at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health have discovered abnormal levels of specific gut bacteria related to chronic fatigue syndrome and other forms of encephalomyelitis in patients with and without concurrent irritable bowel syndrome. And this is published in the journal Microbiome. And the study is among the first to disentangle the imbalances in the gut bacteria in individuals. But what it comes down to is this, that if you have imbalances in your gut bacteria, you're more susceptible to all forms of illnesses. So what do you do? relatively simple. You go on a raw foods diet. If you can handle it, 2 weeks. Now, that would mean that you would have lots of, you could have beans, canned beans, and salads of every kind, and vegetables. And if you needed to break vegetables down so they're more digestible, you could steam them for a few minutes. They're still going to be considered alive because they have not been altered in their enzymes. Their phytonutrients wouldn't be altered by that. Lots of juices, especially the green juice, and very high in chlorophyll and specifically spirulina, which is just wonderful inside the body. Then every day, three times a day, you take about anywhere from 5 to 10 billion probiotics, the good bacteria. You also take a lot of vitamin C because vitamin C chelates out heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury. You take garlic and onion as much as you can handle. Ginger is also good and lemon is good. These are all detoxifying. Any of the sulfur foods, sulfur grabs a metal and takes it out of the system. So then you replenish the bad bacteria, mainly from meat, sugar, refined carbohydrates, bagels, pretzels, pizzas, and you give it good bacteria, sauerkraut, fermented non-dairy yogurts. That can help you overcome chronic fatigue syndrome all by itself. Now, another thing that we should pay attention to, and that is that we don't, and that is we never look at an orange for its peel. We get the juice from it, and we think that's it. Whatever's important in the orange, I got. Wrong. The orange peel is very important because in the peel, you have the essential oil. And orange essential oil can help alleviate post-traumatic stress disorder. George Washington University. We have upwards of 8% of all Americans will develop post-traumatic stress disorder at some point in their lives. And we know that the way people treat it now is terrible. They're taking drugs for their anxiety and their depression, and then 23 of them a day are killing themselves. In fact, more Americans have killed themselves than all of the casualties, American casualties, in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. So, what can we do? Well, there's several therapies that work. One is being around animals that are going to love you. Even if you go to like a wolf sanctuary, there's one wolf sanctuary, I believe it's out in Colorado, but they're all across the United States. And in fact, just two blocks from where I live, there's a wolf sanctuary. You wouldn't know it's there, but it's 5 acres. And she takes in rescued wolves and they're around other wolves. And she created a natural habitat and they do terrific. Well, what happens is, and I watched a documentary on this, where guys with women with post-traumatic stress disorder would go in this wolf enclosure and a wolf would come over to them. The wolf would sense what the person needed and they just hang out together, just petting a wolf. Now, you don't want to go petting a wolf, unless you're in an environment that it is a therapeutic environment and those wolves are aware of that. But also I found out other animals have a sense of when you're going through a struggle. And one of the things I intend to do, I will do, because I feel is needed. I tried it years ago and I couldn't get the local community to give me a zoning permit. For 14 years up in Stone Ridge, I wanted to have a place where 12 months a year, on the weekends, parents and schools and teachers and communities could bring children so they can learn about animals and nature and how food is grown and how herbs are grown and how tofu is made and how bread is baked. Let them learn these skills. Let them be around animals so they love animals. They don't want to then eat the animals. And I even had it where, like the museum, you're walking through the museum and you see a little booth and you go in the booth and there are like two little benches and you sit on a bench and a screen TV has like a 10-minute little clip on whatever that booth is representing, the history of dinosaurs. But instead, you have throughout the farm, you have the animal sanctuary, you have screens that people can sit and watch about how animals are treated, how they should be treated, where food comes from. That would make an enormous impact. But also, where people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, who have severe associated disorders, could come and be around animals and nature, and kids in particular with autism, and help them rebalance emotionally. I've seen it. I've worked with people. In fact, there was one person who just couldn't fit in, was terrified of people. And I got a call from his father, who's a close friend of mine for a long time, and he said, "My son's got a lot of problems, lots, in and out of psychiatric institutions, nothing helps, rage, violence. Do you think this could help?" I said, "Let's try it." 2 weeks of being around animals and loving them. Do you know what it's like to go up to a Jenny, which is a female mule, and they're wonderful, and they come right up to you, and they want you to pet their head and their neck, and they just have these big, beautiful eyes, and they look at you, and they put their nose up to your nose. Well, you talk about de-stressing it. That you just melt, and you're sitting there, and suddenly a chicken that would have otherwise been someone's dinner, but we rescue chickens, and jumps up on your lap and just lies down, and you just pet it, and it's just so calming. The more you spend with animals, especially rescued animals that have been given love and safety and a home, they're not going to be on anyone's plate. Boy, do they open up. Wow. And then everywhere you go, they're right with you. Now, if you have anxiety problems, think of a kid. And now that kind of environment is very important. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to look at property upstate. I'm just going to make sure that the next time I'm not in a town where you got a bunch of anally retentive people who don't want anything that's really progressive. You got to remember the fact that people are in the country does not mean they're progressive. They're regressive. And they don't want anything they didn't think about, no matter how humane it could be and how important it could be. So you got to get the zoning right, no matter what you do anywhere in America. If you don't, then you end up with good ideas, but the wrong place. So it's going to be the right idea with the right place, but I'm going to have that within a year. I'll let you all know when it happens. In any case, so be around nature, but also to help with post-traumatic stress disorder. And also add this in, orange essential oil, because that's where they take the oil out of the orange peel, and that had a calming effect as an orange essential oil for stressful situation. They showed improvement in all the markers of stress and fear. So that's important, something, you know, we wouldn't have known about. And finally, curcumin, which comes from turmeric, could help combat colitis. This is according to Baylor University. And this was published in Nature Science Reports. And the study identifies the efficacy of a specific curcumin preparation containing essential turmeric oils, and it was able to reduce colitis symptoms naturally. And turmeric, by the way, is tremendous in turning off pain. Its anti-inflammatory properties are phenomenal. So, quote, "The therapeutic benefits of turmeric can be attained at its best by combining curcumin with turmerone, T-U-R-M-E-R-O-N-E, an active compound derived from the essential oil of turmeric," according to the lead researcher. So that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Thought I'd feel this way, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad I got the chance to say.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the United States who, and around the world who email and tell us what you're interested in. We try to cover a lot of this. And I want to share with you now a commentary. This is from Robert Perry from Consortium News. And Robert's one of those very ethical, very smart guys who cannot be bribed, can't be influenced by someone else's politics. So whatever he sees and he writes about, that's the way it is. And here's what he has to say about Donald Trump's failing presidency. Quote, the 100-day mark may be an artificial measuring stick for a U.S. president. Obviously, much can happen in the remaining 1,361 days of a four-year term. But Donald Trump's decision in his first 3 months put him on an almost irreversible path to failure. He now appears to be little more than a traditional Republican with more than a little dash of Kardashian sleaze in him. Boorish reality TV star reading from a neocon script that could have been written for many of his GOP rivals. Except he delivers his lines with worse grammar and a limited vocabulary, favoring imprecise words such as beautiful and sad. Trump also has the look of a con man. He sold himself as a populist who would fight for the forgotten Americans, but is following domestic policies aimed at comforting his super-rich friends while afflicting his most loyal blue-collar supporters. He promises a tax package that will give huge breaks to the already well-to-do. He backed a Republican health care plan that would have left 24 million Americans without insurance, but saved billions for billionaires. And he has no way of delivering on his trillion-dollar infrastructure plan, although he keeps pushing his beautiful wall along the entire Mexican border. On the foreign policy front, Trump has broken his vow to move away from the endless war and needless confrontation and avoid their extraordinary cost in blood and treasure. After months of getting newspapers slapped by the mainstream media over Russiagate, Trump has put his tail between his legs and has become a housebroken dog to the neocon dogma. He also licks the hand of Israel and Saudi Arabia as he and his team keep repeating the favorite Israeli-Saudi mantra that Iran is the principal sponsor of terrorism. His administration also blames Iran, not Israel, Saudi Arabia, and indeed the United States for Middle Eastern instability. But it was President George W. Bush and his neocon advisors who devised the disastrous invasion of Iraq with Israeli backing. It was President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton who pushed for regime change in Libya and Syria, another Israeli-Saudi priority. It was Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states that have armed al-Qaeda, Islamic State, and other Sunni terrorist groups. It is Israel that has persecuted the indigenous Palestinian population for generations and invaded Lebanon, among other neighbors. For all its faults, Iran has mostly opposed these operations and is now contributing military forces to fight Islamic State and al-Qaeda militants in Iraq and Syria. Yet, Trump has now conform to the upside-down view of the Middle East that all the important people of official Washington know to be true, and that is all, it's all Iran's fault, except, of course, what can be pinned on Russia. Is Trump a sociopath? Well, my guest last night believes he is, but under intense pressure from the Democrat and Republican establishments and facing an intelligence community-driven hysteria over vague links between some of his advisors in Moscow, Trump has further buckled on his pledge to improve relations with Russia. Instead, he's ratcheting up the rhetoric and threats. Trump earned official Washington's pat on the head for firing 59 Tomahawk missiles at Syria on April 6 before any careful evaluation of a chemical weapon incident in northern Syria could be conducted, an action that Hillary Clinton and neocon-dominated commentator class of official Washington just loved. Trump regaled Fox Business Network's Maria Bartiromo with the tale of how he disclosed the missile strike to Chinese President Xi Jinping during a state visit to Trump's estate, giving the impression that he might be similarly reckless in attacking North Korea. Though Trump is what he is, He seems to enjoy watching shocked looks on people's faces. I'm told that he explained to an associate that one of his joys is in grabbing women to see their stunned reaction of fitting with his boast to Billy Bush on Access Hollywood that women are powerless to object given his status as a star. Really? Trump is more respectful and obedient towards men with real money. His head was surely turned when Sheldon Adelson, one of Israel's most devoted advocates, who has publicly suggested dropping a nuclear bomb inside of Iran, what could possibly go wrong with that, to coerce its government to do what Israel wants. And then he donated a record $5 million to Trump's inaugural festivities. Indeed, what we have learned about Trump in the first 100 days is that he is a thin-skinned, insecure narcissist who obsesses over slights and relishes tangible signs of praise and approval. The Clinton campaign was right about one thing at least, that Trump's fragile ego puts the future of mankind at risk given his control of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Further enhancing that danger is that Trump apparently thinks his erratic behavior is a plus, not realizing that there are limits to what a madman can get away with, even if he has that twitchy finger on the nuclear button. At some point, one of Trump's crazed bluffs will be called, and then he will have little choice but to prove he's a real man, well, a real madman. None of that, these criticisms comes as much surprise, but there was hope after his surprise election that this arrogant figure might at least have the backbone to stand up against official Washington's neoconservative foreign policy orthodoxies and challenge the Israeli-Saudi dominance of U.S. policies in the Middle East. The thinking went that Trump was a self-centered SOB, but that personality might help him resist the pressures from the Washington establishment and thus avert a new dangerous and expensive Cold War with Russia. Cooperation with Russia also held out prospects for finally ending the endless wars of his immediate predecessors. Some Trump supporters told me that perhaps someone like Trump was the only hope to shatter the orthodoxies that had come to encase official Washington's thinking in concrete. These hopeful supporters saw him as an uncouth buffoon, yes, but maybe someone who wouldn't care what was said about him on CNN or the New York Times or at the Brookings Institute conference, someone who was unorthodox enough to sledgehammer cracks in the official group thinking, allowing some necessary light in, but it didn't happen. Despite denials from mainstream commentators about America's having a deep state, one does exist in Washington, as should be obvious watching the cable news shows or reading the major newspapers. Indeed, there is arguably less diversity allowed in the vaunted free press of America than in some supposedly authoritarian states. For instance, even when people with solid professional credentials who disagree with the U.S. government's interpretation of the evidence of the April 4th chemical incident in Syria are excluded from participating in public debate, the major U.S. media even takes pride in that exclusion because these people are deemed fringe or responsible for propaganda or guilty of fake news. The tendency towards careerist groupthink is very powerful in Washington and the national media. So Trump faced daunting challenges when he entered the presidency, requiring him to move quickly and decisively. If he hoped to change the direction of the neocon endless war bandwagon, he needed to put the establishment forces on the defensive by telling the truth about events where the Obama administration has kept the American people in the dark, such as the sarin gas of August 21, 2013, which was pinned on the Syrian government, though evidence pointed directly to the anti-government rebels that we supported. And the Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 shot down over eastern Ukraine, which was blamed on Russia, while key U.S. intelligence evidence was kept hidden. Trump also needed to show that he would not be the patsy of either Israel or Saudi royal family. That would have required telling some unpleasant truths, such as the well-known fact that inside the U.S. intelligence community that Saudi Arabia and its Gulf allies have been state sponsors of terrorism for decades, making the fanatical killers from Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State possible, and that Israel has been up foreign policy in the United States in the region for generations. if Trump really had the guts that he likes people to think he has, he could have frozen or seized Saudi assets as punishment for the kingdom's state sponsorship of terrorism and using Sunni extremists as a paramilitary force in the sectarian rivalry with Shiite-ruled countries like Iran. Or if he wanted to demonstrate his defiance of the hyped-up Russiagate allegations, he could have immediately announced a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin on how to bring the war on terror to a conclusion rather than play a timid defense. But he did none of the above. Now, why didn't he? Well, if you had a chance to listen to last night's program, where we had Professor John Gartner on talking about this, he had some very specific comments about what he and many others in the mental health community feel is a completely emotionally unstable person who has specific disorders, narcissistic disorders. And many people don't need to have someone tell you that a person has a disorder. You look for patterns of behavior in people. It's the pattern of behavior that determines what that person's character is about. And this is really character flaws. Nobody is born with these qualities. These are learned. These are assumed based upon the epigenetic input from our early life and then how we use them to our advantage or to others' disadvantage. So when it came last night to taking a closer look, I chose to let him, you know, talk about what he had to talk about. And then I saved the last small segment of the program. For those of you who didn't hear it, here are my thoughts on this. He may be right. Professor John Gartner and 50,000 other people in the health field may have some semblance of accuracy when they say that he is an out-of-control narcissist. He has a severe personality disorder and therefore is not qualified emotionally and mentally to be president of the United States. However, there are several things that I would offer a different point of view. It would seem that all the previous presidents, save for perhaps Eisenhower and Carter, had some degree of narcissistic personality disorder, although this would not be diagnosed as sadistically dangerous, meaning I don't see where these people got pleasure from other people's pain. All the presidents from Reagan through Obama possessed charm. In fact, some possessed extreme charm. Ronald Reagan had that Hollywood charisma, good looks, easygoing smile, and very quick with his improvisational wit and humor. There was Daddy Bush Sr. with his paternal quality and that Texan gentleman nature and stature. There was Bill Clinton for his physical charisma, his hipness, wearing the dark sunglasses and playing the sax, an equally quick wit, and as well as unquestionably bright guy, and Baby Bush for his down-home Southern charm and religious morals, and characterized well by Machiavelli in his political novel The Prince, the guy, well, you'd want to sit on a bar stool with. Obama for his equally sharp wit, his athleticism, his informal mannerisms, and a certain lightheartedness towards criticism. But they all smiled a lot. And what each also possessed is critically lacking in Trump, and that is the ability to be self-critical, accept mistakes at times, and laugh at oneself. Those are not part of Trump. Trump truly never displays a sense of humor in any fashion, and what humor he shows is only framed in ridicule and nasty slurs, hence sadistic humor. But here is where I would offer a substantially different point of view. It is my personal point of view that all the presidents except Eisenhower, though he had his flaws, and Carter, who certainly had his flaws, he also allowed America to engage in regime change in four different countries, but all the other presidents set aside their charm, their actions are what they should be judged for. And those actions are diabolical. Millions of people killed, tens of millions of people homeless or suffering, and not one has taken responsibility for any of that. I'll give you just a few examples. Ronald Reagan, perhaps the only president during the last 35 years who you may qualify as psychologically sound. And what he did is that he didn't launch outright immoral wars, but he did support confrontations that were more aligned with the time of the Cold War and remnants of McCarthyism's fear of the Soviet Union and communism. But some of his questionable actions that could be associated with abnormal mental behavior would be the scandals of Iran-Contra, the U.S. federal cocaine smuggling, where the CIA involved itself, and Gary Webb was absolutely right in bringing cocaine to southeast Los Angeles, supporting the first modern wave of Islamic militancy and terrorism in the Soviet-Afghan War, serving as a spy that most people are not aware of for the FBI in Hollywood during the McCarthy Red Scare, and supporting South African apartheid, and he was negative towards Mandela. He supported also very repressive regimes and death squads in Central America, notably Nicaragua and El Salvador. And these were genocidal. So clearly he committed crimes against humanity. And it couldn't have happened without him. Daddy Bush, he deployed weapons of depleted uranium and cluster bombs in the first Iraq War in Kuwait, exterminated thousands of Iraqi soldiers fleeing Kuwait to return to Iraq. And that was a crime of these people were retreating, many on foot. And you saw this like 60 miles of dead bodies and charred machines. It was Bush, along with the intel community, that cut deals with the Ayatollah to create the October surprise that led to Reagan being in office. And years of dealing privately and at the federal level with repressive regimes, including the Saudi family, the bin Laden family, the Eastern Bloc fascist expats, especially Ukraine, Saddam Hussein, and attempts to shut down investigations and savings loan scandals and the BCCI money laundering scandal, and Bill Clinton, well, his numerous sexual scandals. And just a thought. On the one hand, I believe that Bill O'Reilly has got what he had coming. Now, set aside his politics for a moment. When someone is as powerful and then turns around and moralizes to other people about what is appropriate or inappropriate sexual behavior, and then we find out that not just once, in fact, I have set aside the women who chose to have sex with him even when he was married, hence it was a consensual adulterous sexual act. I interviewed at length the lawyer, a woman who was his lover for 29 years, including when he was married. And she told me that he bragged to her that before he became Attorney General of Arkansas, he had 2,000 or 3,000 sexual different relationships. And she said he was just, you know, he had a problem. Okay, fine, he had a problem. But it's not just a problem when you rape someone. And serial raping of women because you had the power, do you think, to get away with it. That doesn't have statute of limitations. That should still be prosecuted today. So I'm questioning, go after Bill O'Reilly, yes, and Roger Ailes, yes, and show them that we are a country that does not tolerate that kind of sexual harassment, but neither one was shown to have actually had sex and completely love a guy who's a rapist. Explain that to me. I'd like to understand your reasoning. Because you like someone? Because they play a sax? Because they seem a little hip? Why don't you go down to Haiti and ask the people of Haiti, how do you like the Clintons? Or Yugoslavia, Croatia, Bosnia? How do you like the Clintons? The 500,000 children and the million parents in Iraq who had those children die because of the Clinton sanctions? How do you like the Clintons? And I could go around the world and show you the problems that have occurred in Libya, and the dead, and the disaster, and in Syria, and Honduras, and the coup. There's something pathologically wrong with the left that supports those kind of people and is willing to overlook or forgive their indiscretions, which were not just sexual harassment or inappropriate comments, but allegations of actual rape. Why don't you hold a press conference and let all the people who claim Bill Clinton raped them come forward and present their evidence. And then ask yourself, is it credible? Not credible? And if it's credible, why aren't there any efforts at any form of sanctioning or reprimand to him? That's how hypocritical our society is today. Oh, and let's not forget, excuse me, Rwanda, his betrayal of the unions, the destruction of the Glass-Steagall Act, which opened up all of our society for financial exploitation, the three strikes and you're out, the rise of private prisons, the gutting of prisoner rights, the racism behind his version of the war on drugs, and a whole lot there to be responsible for. Baby Bush, clearly a war criminal with his invasion of Iraq based upon solid evidence of lies and corruption, huge civilian deaths in Afghanistan and Iraq, torture and black site operations, the breakdown of constitutional rights to set up a police state, the 9/11 cover-up, and then Obama. Every single promise he made, he broke. Remember? Universal health care, which we should have today. That would solve all these problems. Nope, it was Obamacare. Everything was a lie. Everything. Support for public schooling, tackle the prison population, anti-war stance. No, all was pro-war. Invaded more countries than any other president of the United States in our history. The assassination of American citizens, the National Defense Authorization Act, regime changes he was responsible for in Ukraine, Honduras, Paraguay, Libya, Syria, and Yemen, expansion of drone programs in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, the repression of civil rights through his creation of the surveillance state and unregulated spying. So what kind of a person and what kind of a personality disorder does a person have to have before you hold them responsible? Or if you like their personality, do you give a free pass on them? I don't care what you do. I don't care what laws you break. I don't care who you kill. I don't care how many you kill. I don't care how you adulterate the planet. I don't care if you neglect global warming. I don't care if you put everyone in your cabinet who's from the same swamp that others will get. Seems like there's an endless supply of swamp monsters willing to humanize themselves beyond their greed edifice to come to work in every administration. They all have the same swamp. They all have the same swamp demons that come into their life, and suddenly all morals, ethics, all spirituality are simply abrogated to non-existent ether. So, do these people have personality disorders? Do they have mental disorders? Because if you create all these acts against people around the world with no sense of compassion, with no sense of care, that defines you as a sociopath. But no one talks about anyone else, just the person they hate most at this moment. And he may deserve all of your hate and animus, but where is it shared with all the others who also deserved it? I'm going to tell you someone who I believe deserves to be investigated thoroughly, and that's George Soros. This is a 60 Minutes clip I found. I'm only going to play you the first 2 minutes of it until after he makes a statement, because this statement says it all. Please listen in to George Soros being interviewed on 60 Minutes.
Of all the financial titans and philanthropists of the 20th century, none are more complex or mysterious than George Soros. Like Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and the Rockefellers, he amassed billions through ruthless business decisions, only to turn around and give away most of his fortune to advance his own personal philosophy. He can move world financial markets simply by voicing an opinion, or destabilize a government by buying and selling its currency. He also pledged more aid last year to help people in Russia than the U.S. government did. But now George Soros is worried. He thinks the global economy is coming apart at the seams and that the world needs to be protected from people like George Soros.
We may now think that everything is fine, but the fact is that the system is broke and it needs fixing.
What you're doing is asking some form of regulation to protect the world against you.
Well, I am a player, and I think all players should be regulated. There have to be rules of the game.
It'll take 81,000 to buy. Buy 48,000. Buy them 69,000 YUM.
Right now, his Quantum Group hedge fund moves $14 billion of rich investors' money around the world every day, looking for profits and answering to no one. Soros makes huge bets on whole countries and economies. Last year, when he saw cracks in the Asia boom, he began selling the currency in Thailand. Traders in Hong Kong followed suit, triggering a financial crisis that plunged much of Asia into a depression.
In the last 2 years, you've been blamed for financial collapse of Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, Japan, and Russia.
All of the above.
Yeah, yeah. Are you that powerful?
No, I think there's a great misunderstanding.
The Prime Minister of Malaysia.
Yes.
Said that the region spent 40 years trying to build up its economy, and along comes a moron like Soros, right, with a lot of money, and it's all over. He called you a criminal.
It's easier for him to blame an outside force than to admit that they were mismanaging their economy and their currency. The French finance minister talked about hanging speculators from lampposts.
Soros says the Asian currencies would have collapsed even if he hadn't been in the market. They were overvalued. He says people tend to follow his lead because he's been so successful.
I think that I've been blamed for everything. I am basically there to make money. I cannot and do not look at the social consequences of what I do.
Okay, listen to what he just said. Listen, please get this right. I'm there to make money. I do not look at the personal and social consequences of how I make my money. Wow. Why would you accept money from a company, an organization, a foundation that does not go in and build factories, does not go into Indonesia or Russia and put money where you have long-term investment, but rather you speculate. You look for a weakness in a country. Think of the 100 million Russians that had so little value in the ruble because you shorted it. And in the peso in South America, the U.S. taxpayers had to come and bail out. The people in Mexico suffered. But George Soros makes money. And yet he's right there saying, you heard him in his own words, I'm there to make money, but I don't have any moral thought about how I make it and who's affected and how they're affected. Now, show me the difference between that statement, which was an honest statement, and all the other oligarchs and all the other technocrats working for oligarchs and all the other people within our banking systems who are foreclosing people when they made the mistake and people trusted them and then they threw those people out, but they weren't fired themselves. And think of all the people working for pharmaceutical companies who make drugs that are not proven safe, that actually are known like Vioxx to injure and kill people with heart attacks and strokes. And yet the person who was behind those decisions got $45 million when he left the company. No one was fined. So we have a whole society that functions on greed, insensitivity, lack of empathy, with no care about the consequences. So, why is it that the left is so good, and rightly so, at condemning people who take money from the Koch brothers to do their bidding, but no one criticizes on the left the money that organizations and individuals take from Soros or his foundations? And yet, ask the average person, ask someone that's taking their money. Ask this question of Democracy Now. Got money from the Soros Foundation. Why? Why would you take money from this man, knowing how many people suffered for him to make that? Just a thought. Now, also, I have a difference of opinion with my guest last night, Dr. John Gartner, and that is because he was so emphatic in emphasizing that the diagnosis that he would make of Trump comes from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry. Well, I'm in the process of completing a major documentary called Manufacturing Madness, and I have several dozen leading psychiatrists that you will see in the film who show you that there is not a single not 1% of that is scientifically accurate. It's like a comic book. Here are some of the people who will criticize the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry. So when they say, oh, your baby has bipolar, your baby's 6 months old, you say, well, my baby laughs and cries. Well, that's bipolar, isn't it? Two extremes. Got to give it a drug. But the drug could kill the baby. Well, I'm just being the good psychiatrist. No, you're being a schmuck. You know, never allow any doctor to give your baby some mind-altering psychoactive medication unless you first look it up and see, is this legitimate? And don't look at the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual because it is garbage. It is complete junk science. It is based upon voting. No science. Hands up. Do we believe that someone that looks out a window is distractible and therefore that's a brain chemical imbalance? Yes. And then it goes in. Here's what some people have to say about the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. This is Dr. Alan Francis, Professor Emeritus of Psychiatry at Duke University. And guess what? The former chair of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, number 4. Here's what he has to say. Quote, "This is the saddest moment in my 45-year career of studying, practicing, and teaching psychiatry. The Board of Trustees of the American Psychiatric Association has given its final approval to a deeply flawed DSM-5 containing many changes that seem clearly unsafe and scientifically unsound. My best advice to clinicians, to the press, and to the general public, be skeptical and don't follow the DSM-5 blindly down a road likely to lead to massive overdiagnosing and harmful overmedication." Quote, "The DSM-5 violates the most sacred and most frequently ignored tenet of medicine, first do no harm. That's why this is such a sad moment." From Dr. Leah Greenfield, and quote, "The DMS approach is similar to attempting to salvage a house falling apart because it was built on an unsound foundation. By adding to it a fresh coat of paint and new shutters, what is needed, in contrast, is to dismantle the structure, establish a sound foundation, and then rebuild the house on top of it." Now, three major fads in child psychiatry today, quote, "Attention deficit disorder, tripled in the last 20 years, and autistic disorder, excuse me, increased 20 times, 2,000% in the past 20 years. Childhood bipolar disorder increased 4,000% during the past 20 years. More than 50 mental health professional associations petitioned for an outside review of the DSM-5 to provide an independent judgment on its supporting evidence and to evaluate the balance between its risks and benefits. This was ignored by the American Psychiatric Association, which oversees this. And the DSM-5 is a manual for diagnosing hyperinflation. Normal behaviors are mentally pathologized. And some of the largest problems with the DSM-5, it enables emotional reactions towards serious illness, such as cancer, to then be diagnosed as mental disturbances. For example, if you have a terrible disease, you're not going to feel good about anything. You'll frequently be depressed. That doesn't mean you have a clinical depression or brain chemical imbalance at all. It means you have a disease to which you don't feel good about your chance of living. So why should that be pathologized? But it is. In fact, normal grief is now defined as major depressive disorder. Thus, medicalization of grief when there is an emotional reaction for the loss of a loved one. So a family member dies, you feel grief, now you can be diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder and given a drug? It's all about selling drugs. Everything is about selling something in America. And that's unfortunate. The everyday forgetting characteristics of getting older is now being called a minor neurocognitive disorder. It's not a minor neurocognitive disorder. You're getting older. You know, it's a normal, everyday part of aging. Yet as long as they can diagnose it, and then they can get paid for it, and then they can give you a drug for it. A new category, adult attention deficit disorder. And this will lead to widespread misuse and stimulant drugs for performance enhancement and recreation. And also eating excessively for more than 12 times in a month. You just overeat. Well, most people are overeating or eating more than 12 times in a month overeating. Now that's a whole new disorder. And if you criticize changes, then suddenly you're given another disorder. So everything today has now been a disorder. If a female cannot get sexually aroused, that's now considered female orgasm disorders without looking at the context. So it's all garbage. So therefore, I would suggest that where the President of the United States certainly is a narcissist, it certainly is at a level of disconnect that I wouldn't trust his actions on for a second. Also, I see his capacity to lie. That doesn't mean he has a brain chemical imbalance. That just means he's as a person of poor character. So what is it about us, we the people, that people who have good character, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Gandhi, the people like Jill Stein, Ralph Nader, who have been on the right side of every issue, the right side of history on every issue, and we have no respect for them and no confidence in them, but sociopaths, narcissists, people with terrible character flaws, we just seem not to be able to get enough of them. And then we're angry when the results of our selection of them and their reactions to what they're faced with end up causing millions of people to die and suffer. Then shouldn't we be looking in the mirror and asking ourselves, why didn't I stand up and vote for a third-party person? Why didn't I go out and campaign against that person? Just some things to think about. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening today. And by the way, I'm going to be doing a webinar in 2 weeks, Sunday night, a webinar on reversing the aging process, slowing it down, reversing, adding years onto your life, and dealing with the diseases of aging. You can go to GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to see more information on it. Have a nice day, everyone.
Anyone who ever loved, could look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever